You've been told the dark web is a lawless jungle of hackers, hitmen, and internet boogeymen. But what if I told you it was invented by the US government? Not just influenced by them, built by them. Top secret military lab, Cold War paranoia, full anonymity. And then, just like that, they handed it over to the public. No restrictions, no oversight, no explanation. Why? Because the only way to stay hidden is to disappear in a crowd. And guess who the crowd is? You. Tor, the Onion Router, the most powerful anonymity network on Earth. Whistleblowers use it. Activists use it. Criminals use it. And yeah, so does the CIA. This isn't a story about technology. It's a story about control. And if you think this ends with freedom, you haven't been paying attention. This wasn't some internet glitch. It wasn't a bug in the system. It was the system. The dark web didn't grow out of chaos. It was planted like a trap door by people who knew exactly what they were doing. A team of US military contractors built a platform that could make you invisible online, untraceable, untouchable. And then they released it into the wild. Free to use, no restrictions, no public explanation. They called it a gift, a tool for freedom. But come on, governments don't just give away power. They built a cloak so they could hide inside it. And the only way the cloak works is if you wear it too. Every time you browse privately, send a secure message, or think you're covering your tracks, you're walking deeper into the architecture they designed. Tor isn't just code, it's camouflage. And the only reason it works is because you're helping them disappear. When you log on, you're not escaping surveillance. You're stepping into a war zone, a theater of masks and mirrors where truth is engineered and silence is weaponized. You think you're just browsing, but to someone, you're the cover. Hey folks, before we dive deeper, quick favor please. If you want more stories like this, the kind that slip through the cracks and barely survive the algorithm, please help me by subscribing. No fluff, no sponsors, just weird truths most channels won't touch. All right, back into it. Let's get one thing straight. The internet didn't just happen. It was engineered, funded, structured, and released under the watchful eye of the US military. And when it blew up in the 1990s, everyone thought it was a new frontier. Free speech, free information, a digital Wild West. But it wasn't the Wild West. It was a trap with bad graphics and dial-up sounds. By the time most of us were getting online, emailing, messaging, downloading, we were already being tracked. Every click, every post, every login, not just by companies, but by governments. The original internet protocols weren't designed to hide you. They were designed to identify you. IP addresses, built in. DNS, trackable. Cookies, surveillance snacks. And we didn't question any of it, because it was exciting, because it was new, and because no one told us we were walking naked through a digital minefield. And the craziest part? You've already been inside it. Unlisted YouTube videos? That's the deep web. Online banking? Netflix queues? Your Amazon order history? The deep web. Even your late night search for why do I sneeze 10 times in a row? Yep, still deep web. By the late 90s, over 350 million people were online. But the infrastructure underneath, it was transparent as glass. You were never anonymous, not for a second. And here's the part no one told you. That transparency wasn't an accident. The people who built the system made sure your data could always be traced. Because if they ever needed to find you, they could. And that's the world we logged into, thinking we were free. Back in the mid-90s, while the rest of us were marveling at floppy disks and dial-up tones, the US government had a different problem. They didn't want to control the internet. They wanted to move through it invisibly. So, inside the Naval Research Laboratory, yes, the same branch of the military that helped invent GPS and radar, a team of computer scientists was tasked with solving a very specific challenge. How do you hide an intelligence agent online without looking like you're hiding anything? The answer was onion routing. As the Naval Research Lab wrote in one of their early technical papers, I quote, "Our motivation here is not to provide anonymous communication, but to separate identification from routing." Translation? It was never just about privacy. It was about compartmentalization and control. Here's the tech in plain English. Instead of sending your data directly from point A to point B, onion routing bounces it through multiple layers, servers around the world, each encrypted like a layer of an onion. No single point ever sees both where the message came from and where it's going. It's elegant, it's brilliant, and it was designed for spies. Think of it like a secret hallway built on top of the regular internet. Only people with a map even know it's there. It's called an overlay network, and it routes your traffic through hidden corridors that sit on top of the public web, but stay invisible to anyone not inside the system. By 1997, the system was up and running. The US Navy had built the digital invisibility cloak they needed. Private, untraceable, and uncrackable, at least in theory. But then something happened. The designers realized a fatal flaw. If only government agents used it, then every message moving through the network would look like it came from the government. Common sense. Which is a bit of a giveaway when you're trying to run Black Ops. So they made a decision that changed everything. Release it. To the public. To everyone. Let activists use it. Let journalists use it. Let criminals use it. Why? Because the more people who used the network, the more the government could hide inside it. This wasn't about liberty. It was about noise. It was about hiding in the crowd. So, in the early 2000s, the system became open source. They called it Tor, the onion router. And you downloaded it, maybe to protect your privacy, maybe to browse freely, maybe just because you were curious. But here's what you didn't realize. You weren't just using Tor, you were powering it. Because the system only works when there's traffic, lots of it. Innocent traffic, suspicious traffic, mixed together into one encrypted blur. They needed cover, and you? You became the cover. Every secure message you send, every search you try to hide, every anonymous click you make, it doesn't just protect you, it protects them. So, Tor goes public. You can download it, run it, use it. It's open source, free, and supposedly untouchable. It feels like a win for privacy, and at first glance, it is. Journalists in oppressive countries start using Tor to send out stories without getting arrested. Whistleblowers leak documents. Everyday people start browsing without ads, watching their every move. But you know who else shows up? Drug traffickers, money launderers, black markets, child exploitation networks, hitmen for hire scams. Suddenly, Tor isn't just the internet's invisibility cloak, it's a digital free-for-all. And that's exactly what made it perfect. Because now, everyone's using it. Good guys, bad guys, people in between. The system works even better now because it's full of noise. And no one knows who's who anymore. But here's where it gets weird. While the public thought Tor had been cut loose, just another tool floating out in cyberspace, the funding never really stopped. In fact, Tor was still being quietly bankrolled by the US government. Here's the data. In 2007, 100% of Tor's funding came from the US government. 2008, 86%. 2009, 90%. 2010, 94%. 2011, 78%. 2012, 81%. 2013, 94%. That's not hands off. That's hands in the control panel. And think about that. The government created an anonymity tool, then kept secretly funding it while using it themselves. Why? Because they can't shut it down. They need it. A CIA operative, an undercover narcotics agent, a military cyber operative, they all rely on Tor to operate without leaving footprints. Same system, same encryption, same cloak. So Tor isn't the enemy, but it's not your ally either. It's a tool, and like any tool, it serves whoever's holding the handle. And the truth is, they've been holding it the whole time. Tor didn't go mainstream because of journalists or free speech movements. It went mainstream because of a website called Silk Road. Launched in 2011, Silk Road was essentially the Amazon of the underground, hosted on the dark web, accessed through Tor, and fueled by Bitcoin. You could find substances there that would never pass an FDA label. And for a while, it thrived, raking up more than $1.2 billion in transactions before it was taken down in 2013. And just like that, Tor's image was wrecked. Suddenly, the dark web wasn't a privacy tool. It was the stuff of nightmares. That's when the myths exploded. Hitmen for hire websites, global trafficking rings, live streams of horrific violence, encrypted cults, and of course, red rooms. Red rooms, they were urban legends about live streams where people supposedly pay to watch unspeakable acts unfold in real time. Viewers controlling the horror like it's a twisted video game. Sounds terrifying. Also, sounds fake. Because despite years of online obsession, not one verified red room has ever been confirmed to exist. Same goes for many of those darknet for hire sites. Turns out, a lot of them were hoaxes, set up to drain money from criminals or even baited by law enforcement. One site was reportedly hacked, revealing emails where admins admitted they were forwarding orders to police and that the entire operation was a con. So yeah, some of the horror stories are real, but a lot of them? Digital campfire tales. That said, let's not pretend everything out there is innocent. There are dark corners in the dark web. Places where black market activity thrives, financial schemes, stolen data, fraud rings, banned material, stuff that should never be seen, let alone shared. A 2016 study analyzed 2,723 active .onion websites. Over half, 1,547 of them, were involved in illicit activity. That's a real number and a real problem. But here's the part no one talks about. Only about 3-6% of Tor users actually access these hidden services. The overwhelming majority, they're just using Tor to protect their privacy, browsing the normal internet, reading the news, sending encrypted messages. And that's the contradiction. The media turned Tor into a horror story. But in reality, it was doing exactly what it was meant to do, protect privacy for everyone. Good people, bad people, and everyone in between. Here's the problem with anonymity. It's not a moral position, it's a mathematical one. Once a system allows people to move without being seen, it doesn't get to ask why they're doing it. Tor doesn't check intentions. It doesn't scan your soul. It treats a whistleblower and a scammer exactly the same. And that's the paradox we can't shake. Because the same tool that shields a journalist can hide a trafficker. The same encryption that protects a protester can cover for someone planning harm. It's not a bug. It's not a loophole. It's the cost of freedom in a digital world. There's no version of anonymity that filters for morality. You either protect everyone or you protect no one. And here's the kicker. Even if law enforcement agencies could shut it all down, they wouldn't. Because the people who built this network, they still use it. Edward Snowden once said that using Tor and encryption wasn't just smart, it was essential for anyone who values privacy. And yes, that includes the very intelligence agencies who've tried to break it. Even they rely on it, because it works. Military intelligence, undercover operatives, cybersecurity teams, they need untraceable channels just as much as anyone else, probably more. Back in the early 2000s, Roger Dingledine, one of the original developers of Tor, said it best, I quote, "The US government can't run an anonymity system and then only use it themselves, because every time someone sees traffic coming from it, they'll assume it's another intelligence agent." So what did they do? They gave it to you. They needed a crowd to hide it. A digital camouflage. And they knew the only way to make it work was to let everyone in. You, me, activists, criminals, dissidents, agents. That's the trade. That's the paradox. You can't restrict a system designed to be unrestricted. You can't put a leash on a network meant to vanish into shadows. You either get all of it or none of it. And whether you like it or not, you're already inside. Here's what nobody tells you about Tor. Just because you're anonymous doesn't mean you're safe. You see, Tor traffic bounces through three layers: the entry node, the middle node, and the exit node. Now, in case that sounds too technical, just think of each node as a pit stop. Your traffic bounces from one relay to another, like handing off a sealed envelope across three strangers. The last one, that's the exit node. And that's where things get dangerous. That last one, that exit node, it sees everything. Because that's the final handoff between the encrypted Tor network and the regular internet. And if you're not using encryption like HTTPS on the other end, your data comes out in plain text. Your login attempts, your messages, your searches. And here's the kicker. Anyone can run an exit node, including researchers, hackers, intelligence agencies, foreign governments. And they do. Because if you control that final node, you control the window. You can log traffic, snoop on activity, even inject malware into the stream. Back in 2007, a Swedish hacker named Dan Egerstad set up a few exit nodes for fun. Within days, he was capturing embassy emails from places like India, Iran, and Russia, completely unencrypted. More recently, researchers discovered hundreds of Tor exit nodes injecting malicious scripts into unencrypted traffic. In 2020, a single actor was suspected of operating over 25% of all Tor exit nodes, using them to run man-in-the-middle attacks on users who thought they were invisible. This isn't just exploitation, it's data laundering. You take clean-looking privacy traffic, pass it through compromised channels, and end up with something harvestable. Even better, because Tor is privacy tech, no one questions where the data came from. It's anonymous, it's scrubbed, it's perfect cover. And if you're clever enough, you don't just watch traffic, you can shape it, redirect it, misdirect it. Suddenly, a network built for anonymity becomes a mirror maze. You're not just hiding, you're being funneled. By who? Could be anyone. That's the beauty of it. Freedom tools don't have to be destroyed. They just have to be quietly repurposed. You didn't stumble into this. You were onboarded. Click by click, app by app, permission by permission. You didn't need to force surveillance on the world. You just had to make us ask for it. Anonymity became a brand. Privacy became a product. Freedom became a feature, built into the very architecture of the trap. Tor didn't glitch. It didn't get hijacked. It worked perfectly. It cloaked the movements of intelligence operatives behind a wall of civilian traffic. It gave whistleblowers just enough hope to speak while giving governments a digital smokescreen to operate in plain sight. The more we trusted it, the stronger the illusion became, because the greatest trick they ever pulled was convincing you that you were the one hiding. You weren't. You were the mask. You were the noise. You were the camouflage. If your head's spinning right now, you're not alone. I'm Ralph, and this is Divergent Files. And yeah, we go to places most people won't touch. If this episode hit you in the brainstem or just made you rethink the entire internet, do me a favor, hit like, subscribe, and mash all the algorithm buttons. Because the truth? They haven't exactly been kind to channels like this one. And hey, this whole thing, it's just me and you. No sponsors, no networks, no overlords. Just a little fire, a lot of research, and your support. If you want more deep dives like this, more unfiltered chaos, and a way to keep Divergent Files alive, you can join the crew for as little as $3 a month at patreon.com/divergentfiles. You'll get early access, extended episodes, and the stuff that's too hot for the main channel. Oh, and we're not just on YouTube anymore. Divergent Files Project Podcast is now live on all major platforms. Unfiltered content, long-form breakdowns, and yeah, the gloves come off over there. And if you've got a theory, a story, or a rabbit hole you want us to chase, drop it in the comments. I read every single one. Your idea might just be what we cover next. So, the world is strange. The system's even stranger. And we're just here trying to pull the curtain back one layer at a time. Thanks for watching. Thanks for showing up. And as always, you are truly appreciated.